How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Guys are getting called back for second workouts. We're starting to narrow it down. Let's talk about it.
It's time. You want the best Celtics talk around? Here it is. This is the Rain and Jays podcast. Here's John and Jay.
The NBA draft just days away now, Jay. Days away. It seems like this thing has equal parts gone on forever and snuck up on us. It's kind of weird, but the NBA draft is this week. Depending on when you hear this, it's Thursday. So the Celtics are starting to get guys back in for second workouts. This is big. This is a big deal because some of these guys who are coming in for the second workouts, these are the guys that they may be considering. Not necessarily guaranteed that they're considering them, but that's a good sign for those guys that the Celtics are potentially going to bring these guys in to narrow down the field. So of these second workouts, Jay, who are the names you're hearing, first of all, for the second workouts?
It looks like Jaylen Brown, I guess, has been summoned, according to report. Dragan Bender is kind of a second workout since they went over to Israel and saw him go through an individual workout there. And I don't know who else, honestly. They try to keep it very secret. Like, when Marcus Smart came in for a second workout, I don't think anyone knew about it. Jordan Mickey last year came in for a second workout. I didn't know about that until after the draft. So they like to look at a lot of prospects twice, and especially with the second workouts, I think, because that kind of provides an indicator of who they're thinking about and what they might do. I think they try to keep those as close to the vest as possible. They're a secretive bunch come draft time.
It's funny. The Celtics are very, very good at keeping secrets. Go back to the Brad Stevens signing. That came completely out of nowhere. No one had any indication that that was going on. They can keep secrets if they want, which when you hear about leaks out of the Celtics, that's not happening unless it's A, on purpose, or B, coming from somebody else. So it's not, the Celtics don't leak things unless they really want to. So the fact that some of these names might be coming out could be an indicator that they're letting other teams know, hey, we're bringing Jaylen Brown back. If somebody at 4 or 5 or 6 or whatever really wants to draft Jaylen Brown, the Celtics expressing an interest in bringing him back for a second workout, that could be something.
Yeah, and it doesn't necessarily mean that they want to draft him or they're going to draft him. When they brought Marcus Smart back a couple of years ago, they did so because he was horrible in his first workout. And they did want to draft him, but they also asked Julius Randle to come in for a workout. If you can remember, he decided to go to some, like, what was it, some fashion shoot instead? Was that what he did, like GQ? and he was like, nah, man, not doing that. I've got this GQ thing or whatever it was. And he decided not to come back for that second workout. So I don't know how close the decision was between Smart and Randle, but when one guy comes in and wants to show that he is much better than he performed in the first workout, and then the second guy is like, nah, guys, gotta go to my photo shoot, I'm good. That probably factors into your decision a little bit.
But look, Jaylen Brown, no doubt, a team like Sacramento might want him. So if the Celtics are floating names out there, and I don't know if the Celtics are indeed floating names out there, but those names can reportedly get out there for a reason. Maybe they're angling for a trade. Maybe they're letting these other teams know that, hey, by the way, if you're interested in this guy, well, we've got the third pick. We're willing to deal. So we're willing to take him and take him off of your draft, take him off the draft board. But if you really, really want him, we can talk. Because the Celtics are, by all accounts, shopping that pick. There's no doubt about that. And I feel like at this point, shopping that pick and trading that pick is plan A.
It's got to be plan A. Getting Durant. And that's the only way you have a chance of hitting your real home run this summer. And the top goal, I mean, obviously, the percentages are very slim. But the top goal is getting in an all-star, getting in Kevin Durant, and turning your team into a contender overnight. And so trading that number three pick has to be the goal, because I think that would be their only chance of getting Durant, unless they sign who knows what free agent, and then maybe that'll give them a chance too.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously the plan. So we'll see how that works out. Meanwhile, these guys are going through hell to get in to all of these workouts, crisscrossing the country, going back and forth to this team, that team, the next team, and then coming back to a place like Boston. And it's just, these guys are working and getting their first taste of what this grueling NBA schedule is like.
Yeah, those poor kids yesterday. I mean, Bryce Johnson, he looked like the most exhausted person in the world. He had had four workouts in 4 days. I want to say it was like Milwaukee, Toronto, Indiana, and then Boston, four different cities. And, I mean, these aren't easy workouts they put these guys through. You go through strength testing, conditioning, and then basketball workouts. You have meetings with GMs. It's just like a long, long, long day. And then you get on a plane, you fly to the next city, and you do it all over again. And some of these guys, I mean, it really does throw you right into the NBA lifestyle, because it by the end of the workout schedule, especially for the guys Celtics are looking at later in the first round that really want to impress a lot of teams, it's just vicious. A lot of the top prospects have it easy because they only have three teams they need to go see and want to impress. Some of these other guys are going to 15, 16, 17 places. I want to say Terry Rozier went to 19 teams last year, and that's just nuts in like a month.
Yeah, that's a crazy schedule. But you know, it's a great opportunity for these guys to see what it takes, because this is not unlike a regular NBA travel schedule where you are going from city to city and traveling a lot. It's different, but it's not that much different. And on top of it, you're not going from Boston to Cleveland to play back-to-back games where you're guarding Paul George at home and LeBron James on the road. So you're at least going for individual workouts. You're going to show these guys, and those are hard workouts, but it's not an NBA game. That's the next level for these guys. So as exhausted as they are, they're getting that first taste. Wait till you start playing those back-to-back home and road games. That's going to be something.
Yeah, now we're far enough along that I think people are really starting to have opinions. Who would you pick at number three if they keep it?
I'm still kind of infatuated with Bender. I feel like I kind of want to see what the buzz is after his workout, if there is a buzz. But I'm still in on Bender. I just kind of like what he can do. Theoretically, from that matchup standpoint, where he's that big 7-footer that can play that wing, that's where the league is. That's what the league is calling for. So, I think I'd want to go with him over maybe some guy who might seem like a little more NBA ready.
Yeah, I think his youth is really intriguing too. The youngest player in the draft, he's already played at a high level in Europe. And as much as people criticize his stats, it shows that he can play a smaller role. You know, for a guy who definitely won't be a star right away. He may be however many, 2 or 3 years from becoming a good player. And if you can get him to play defense, give you energy, spot up in the corner, and those are things he's shown that he can do. I appreciate the fact that for the first few years of his career, before he becomes whatever he will become, he looks like the type of guy who can play a role and play 15 minutes and maybe help you in that smaller role.
You know, and one thing that I'd like to think is important is, yes, we're building a contender for right now, but also in the back of your mind, you kind of want to have a set of guys who can carry you to that next level after that. So you have guys who are under contract for the next few years, and hopefully for the next few years, the Celtics can be a contending team. And you don't want to go... You know, I want to keep guys on this team with that long-term potential as well that you might be able to build around. So if after 4 or 5 years, this Celtics team has won a championship or gotten close or however it goes, after 4 or 5 years, there's going to be another process that starts. That's kind of like the cycle. You rebuild for a few years, you get into this mix for a few years, and then you have to start making decisions. And if Bender can be a guy who can contribute on the role player side to winning a title, and then by the time 4 or 5 years comes around, he's developed into a player that can be a cornerstone 2 or 3 type of guy. Like, maybe he's the guy. Maybe he can be a bridge down the road and kind of minimize the next rebuild, or not even a rebuild, maybe a reload down the road around that guy. So it's a longer term thing. Definitely. I think the Celtics have enough where they can make a longer term pick like that, still have enough pieces to trade and bring in a free agent type of guy that can work right now in the building a contender right now. They still have next year's pick, which next year's Brooklyn pick might be even better than this year's pick, and the pick after that. And they've got all the other picks in the draft. So if there's a way that they can draft Bender and make trades involving those other assets, who knows? Maybe they can get the best of both worlds. So I think that, to me, is a more palatable plan. I'm not so sure that Jaylen Brown or Jamal Murray or any of those guys are going to be like the key to getting the Celtics over the hump as far as a contender is nowadays. You know what I mean?
I don't think you're getting too far ahead of yourself at all, talking like two championship cores down the road. but you know what? You know what's funny is that's how you have to think, and that's how the Celtics are going to think. Is if they keep this pick, they are going to take the player who, I've said this before, who has the best odds of reaching a high potential. And I don't know whether that's Bender. It might be. It might be Jaylen Brown. It might be Buddy Hield. I'm intrigued. As weird as it sounds, as bad as the roster fit is, I'm intrigued by Chris Dunn. And we haven't talked a lot about him because obviously he doesn't fit on their roster, and they have a lot of guards. They don't need a point guard, and especially they don't need a point guard who can't shoot. But I find it very difficult to envision an NBA world where Chris Dunn won't be at least a good player. He is super athletic. He's going to get wherever he wants on the court. He's an active, good defender. And, you know, he's got a good feel for the game. And I know he turned the ball over too much, but I think with the NBA spacing, that guy could be an absolute monster. And I keep coming back to him as a guy who doesn't fit at all, but I think at number 3, he might be the best player available. And I know he's older, and there are questions about his age and all of that, but he's just so athletic and so physically gifted. And I see him, he's kind of intriguing. He's more intriguing to me than I think he should be given his fit on Boston's roster.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're kind of making the argument for both sides here, because we already have guards that can't shoot. We got Marcus Smart, who can do maybe not what Dunn can do offensively, but we still don't know what Dunn can do offensively in the NBA. So there's a lot of promise there and potential. And yeah, all of the stuff you said is true. And maybe if the Celtics do pick him, it's a sign. Look, I'll put it this way. The Celtics don't pick him unless there's another trade involving a guard going away. So I can't see the Celtics just taking him and adding him to the mix. Because then what do you do? Well, how do you...
Although, you know, with Evan Turner likely gone, you do have a spot in the perimeter rotation. And you do have a spot with a ball handler. And I think, you know, a guy like Dunn could come in and fulfill some of those ball handling roles. And then Marcus Smart could continue to work off the ball, maybe guard more small forwards than he did last year. They have a lot of versatility because of Smart, I think. And I think Dunn's the type of guy who provides that defensive versatility too. So they might be able to get away with it short term. Obviously, long term, you don't keep that many guards. But I'm not convinced they would have to make a trade right away unless they think, like, Terry Rozier deserves minutes or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing to consider is that we've got guys that we drafted last year that they seem to like, and what happens with their development. So I want to stay away. I want to stay away from guards unless there's a trade that happens. So
you're out on Murray, you're out on Hield, you're out on Dunn.
Yeah, I think I kind of am. I mean, Hield is an interesting guy because of his shooting ability. I mean, he does fill a need there, but I don't know. I think I'd rather go with a guy like Jaylen Brown. At least he's a swing man. You know, you could put him out at the three. It's a little bit different than drafting a point guard. Or Chris, you know, I'd rather take a shot at a power forward guy than before I take Chris Dunn.
Yeah, it's funny because we talk about all these guys, and it's like I think Jaylen Brown theoretically could be a really good fit because Celtics need size on the wing. They love defensive versatility. I just have issues with guys whose basketball awareness is a big concern.
Right.
And I know he's a freak athlete. I know he projects as a really good defender. But it's just like to me, basketball awareness is something that either takes a long time to develop or might never come. And maybe it was his system at California that is giving me these concerns about him. Maybe placed in a different environment, he succeeds. But when basketball awareness is an issue, and especially as high in the draft as number three, I have real concerns about that. And some guys just never develop out of that. And that's a major concern. And all these guys have questions about them. And that's why I think it's seen as mostly, most people see this as two-player draft and then there's a big drop-off. And there's not a lot of separation at number three. The Celtics have a really tough decision. And they're going to be picking from guys that aren't going to be perfect fits for their roster.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, we've talked about this on the show before. You have a couple of guys who have separated themselves. And then picks 3 through, like, 10 are all kind of equal with a bunch of different skills. So it's just a matter of, are we drafting for need? It's a question we answered last week. Are you drafting for need? Are you drafting the best athlete? Are you the best player available? What are you going for? So now, and if you're in a situation where everybody's kind of equal, and then I think you can kind of go with a little bit of need over best athlete because they're all pretty good athletes. They're all kind of equal in a lot of ways. They do a lot of different things differently. But if Jaylen Brown is, you know, how much more athletic or less athletic is Jaylen Brown than Chris Dunn? And it's not a huge, huge drop-off one way or the other, and they're very different players. So at that point, why not get an athlete like Brown who can fit a little bit better, who can at least see his development work with the Celtics. It's in a place where he can play his own game, as opposed to Chris Dunn, who is going to hit this logjam, assuming no trade, and they're going to have to figure out a way to get him. Like, I'm not into the get him to figure it out in that scenario, because it hinders his progress to me. I'd rather take a chance at a guy who fills a need where they do need size in the wing, or a guy like Bender, who has a very unique position. They can kind of go out there and play their own games at their own time frame and develop. So that's my thinking. That's why I kind of want to stay away from the guards, unless the Celtics have plans to trade away a bunch of guards, and that changes things. So that's my take.
Yeah, and the thing about Jalen Brown, too, is the guy they fell in love with last year was Justice Winslow, who I think he was a more established player, a smarter offensive player coming out of Duke. But they share some similar qualities in that they're both big and strong and project as guys who can defend multiple positions. So the guy they fell in love with last year kind of most closely mirrors Brown, although obviously, you know, you don't fall in love with a different, like, it was a different scenario, it was a different player. But I do keep coming back to that Winslow last year was the guy they fell in love with. And who knows, maybe it's Brown this year. I don't think they fall in love with anyone like they fell in love with Winslow last year. They tried to trade everything for that guy. And this draft is not as good as last year's draft. And last year they tried to trade up as high as number 4 to get Justice Winslow.
Yeah.
So they really, really liked him. I doubt they like anyone as much as they liked him at the number 3 spot in this draft.
Okay, so let's take this opportunity to get to some of these questions people have been tweeting in. Let's start at what would be the most disappointing pick the Celtics could make at 3 in your eyes? This comes from at the Gitch, George Wright. The most disappointing pick the Celtics could make at 3. It's an interesting question.
That is an interesting question. I would go Chris, and I think Chris, he might become the best player from that spot. I just think when you're at number 3, you want to get a guy who is going to be a good player. And Chris might be a fantastic player. He might be, as I said, the best player of anybody available at that spot one day. I just think there's too much flop potential there. And obviously the Celtics are going to know him better than I am. They're going to know his personality. They're going to know his work ethic. They're going to know how he's progressed over the last few months, even since the college season, which is probably a big deal for him considering he only started playing organized basketball as a freshman in high school. But I just think at number 3, you do not want to take someone who has that high of a flop potential. I think Chris, out of all these guys, has the lowest floor. So I think that would be the disappointing one to me, but it would also have a whole lot of upside.
Okay, I'm gonna make this one my disappointing pick, and people are gonna probably think I'm crazy, but I'm gonna say Buddy Hield, because I'm still not convinced that shooting translates necessarily like that from college to the NBA. I've seen a lot of guys who can really, really shoot become flops in the NBA. So there's that. And then there's questions about his size. There's questions about his ability to defend. I feel like he's coming in as purely a shooter, and his March Madness performance is setting the bar really, really high, and I think he's going to be the biggest disappointment. Now, he may end up having a J.J. Redick type of career trajectory, but I feel like he might I think people want him to be better than that. They want him to be like this guy who comes in and I don't want to say Steph Curry type shooter, but people are really putting a lot of stock in that. And I feel like he's going to end up becoming a nice role player, kind of like off the bench kind of guy, ultimately. So to take him at 3 would be a bit of a disappointment. Now, if for some reason he fell to 16, which I don't think he will, but if for some reason he fell to 16, then that's a different story, because at that point, that's a nice player to get at that range for what he might be. But I think at 3, you got to hit a bigger home run than that.
So let's ask a hypothetical. If you were guaranteed that Buddy Hield would have a J.J. Redick-type career, would you still pass on him at number 3?
Yes, because I think at 3, you want to have somebody who has a better career than that. I think at 3, you want to get somebody who's got a few all-star games in them type of player. You know, like that's the type of player that I think you want to get at 3, a guy that you can project out and say, this guy's got superstar potential or star potential. And JJ Redick's a nice player, but I want star potential out of 3. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that makes sense. The only thing is, because I think that this is a weaker draft, and I think that there aren't many guys with star potential. Even at number 3, I think. Or there aren't many guys who will become stars in this draft. It's not like last year's draft. Last year's draft was absolutely loaded. Next year's draft is supposed to be absolutely loaded. And the Celtics got the number 3 pick at the wrong time, which is why people are saying that next year's pick swap might be even more valuable. Because that next year, even if you get 5 or 6, you might get a better player next year than you do at 3 this year. And the Nets aren't getting any better. That trade, man, we talk about this all the time, but that trade just keeps getting better and better and better and better and better.
You know, someone tweeted me, and I didn't see it myself, so I'm going to have to take this person's word for it, but apparently Wally Szczerbiak on some Nets broadcast said that was a good trade. Like, recently said that was a good trade for the Nets.
You know what's weird is at the time it didn't feel like a terrible trade, because at the time you thought they were at least going to contend in the Eastern Conference the year after they made the trade, and probably for 2 years. And you never could have foreseen them falling apart so drastically the way they did. I mean,
I don't know, man. I remember saying, because I think at that point I was doing Celtics stuff live with John Duke. I remember we were talking about how the potential for this scenario that was happening, that definitely could exist. Because look, we saw what KG was, we saw what Paul Pierce was. That we all knew that in the span of 2 or 3 years, those guys could fall off a cliff. And if they fell off a cliff, and those guys in the Nets didn't, like Deron Williams was, that's not a guy you could count on. So they were really relying on Lopez being great and Joe Johnson being okay. Like, they, I don't know. When that trade happened, I was like, man, it's sad to see these guys go. And when I saw that those picks were unprotected and how many picks we got, I was like, you know what? This could be a big thing for Boston.
Yeah, but I will say this. The only thing is, at that point, I don't think we knew Deron Williams was a fraud. I think we thought he just had a couple bad injuries, and I think people expected Deron Williams to have a huge season when Paul Pierce and KG got over. I remember Paul Pierce talking like MVP stuff, or at least like serious All-Star stuff about Deron Williams, and so I think you might be underrating a little bit how people saw him. But yeah, obviously they're the Nets. Anytime you get to you're dealing with the Nets, you have the possibility for utter collapse. And man, they had an utter collapse. And the Celtics, they should just think, I really hope Danny Ainge just calls Billy King every night, thanks him, sends him Christmas cards, everything. Like, that guy, Billy King, thank you very much, Billy, from Danny.
Yeah, right. And Prokhorov for pushing King to make some really bad trades. Like, that's an underrated part of this whole thing. Prokhorov was pushing the win now. King could have still, really should have still thrown, like, some top five protection into those picks. At least top three. Like, that, something. So, but, yeah, I think that combination was really beneficial. Let's get to another question here. Dana asks, if we trade to the top eight, which two prospects would you want? Murray and Chris, Bender and Brown. I'm not sure about this scenario that Dana's asking about. Trading into the top eight. So somehow the Celtics keep three and trade into, say, the eighth pick.
So if somehow 16, 23, and 31 netted eight?
Yeah.
Perfect scenario. Bender and Jamal Murray, and I reserve the right to pick two completely different guys if we have the same conversation tomorrow, or even in like 10 minutes.
Okay, I like Bender. If for some reason, we can still get Brown at eight, and we get Bender and Brown, I'm in.
Okay, yeah, and drafting at number eight, I think that changes things a little bit. Like, who are you happy that fell there? Yeah, maybe Brown. I mean, if you pick up any two of those guys, it would be really, really a good thing.
Yeah,
Picking one is tough.
Yeah, picking that third pick is a little bit tough. But somebody like Chris, who you think has the flop potential, but at eight, is he more palatable at eight?
To me, yeah, absolutely he would be.
Yeah.
Because at that stage, you know, you're not picking from a crop of guys who should all be good players.
Right. And I feel the same way. Like, if Buddy Hield dropped to eight instead of three, I think I'm feel better about taking him at eight than at three, which is weird to say because only a few picks later. But I think we're in the same – we feel the same way about two different players. That a few picks later, it just – you don't have that same expectation, that same potential. So picking Hield at eight, somewhere in that 8 to 12 range, I think, is where he fits. So which means there's the potential for him to fall to 16. I'd like him at 16. That'd be great. But, yeah, so I think some of that – we're kind of in the same boat. So those are my two answers.
And you brought this up earlier. I'm really interested to see what type of buzz starts coming out when Bender comes over to work out for teams, because he's been in a minimal role all season. Teams have gone to see him play in Europe, and he's just kind of, you know, played 12 minutes, spotted up in the corner. And if he comes into a workout and shows all the skills that he's shown in previous international competitions, he might start getting some of that buzz. Like remember Porzingis last year? He came over and people realized, man, this guy can really, really play. And when you got him outside of the European setting and started to really see all of his skills in a workout setting, he started picking up all types of buzz. So I think Bender has some of that same potential, because a lot of his skills have kind of been dormant in the role he's played for Maccabi Tel Aviv this past year. And if he can show that he can put the ball on the floor and have great court vision and really move well for a guy his size, I think he's got that potential buzz ability. We might start hearing some real Bender love as the draft draws closer.
Yeah, and so he's working out in Boston on Tuesday. People will go and look at his stats. You also have to understand that the way things work out in Europe, they're not just going to give this kid, and he's a kid, he's still really, really young, they're not just going to throw him out there. There are a lot of older guys who are going to play ahead of him. So because he doesn't play much, because he doesn't have some really gaudy stats out there, it doesn't mean much. We're talking about potential, and they're actually much harder on the younger guys out there than they are in the NBA. So the workout is going to be like the first step. So as he works out for other teams, maybe the Celtics won't let some of that buzz out, but some other teams might. So we're going to start to see what that's going to be all about. And we're going to, I'm really, really, really interested to see what's going on here. Let's start getting into some more of these questions here. George, if there was a deal on the table to get either Butler or Boogie with the same package, who are you taking?
I'm taking Butler, and I'm taking Butler while acknowledging DeMarcus Cousins is a more talented basketball player.
I just think
Cousins is a loose cannon. Cousins is an absolute loose cannon. Jimmy Butler is somebody I want on my team because he defends, he plays hard, and you know he works. DeMarcus Cousins, he's a baby. He's a baby. He's a loose cannon. You don't know what you're going to get for him. When Rondo went on ESPN recently and was like, that King's dysfunction was unlike anything I have ever seen, that goes to show you a little bit about, you know, what was going on between DeMarcus Cousins and George Karl. So I'm out on Cousins, despite thinking he's a great basketball player and basketball talent.
Yeah, he's a top five player in the NBA, but I'm with you. I'd rather have Butler. Butler is still a pretty damn good player. Even for the exact same package, I can't take that chance on a guy coming in and ruining things. And granted, this is the complete opposite of the Sacramento Kings situation. The owners are complete opposite than Vivek Ranadive. He is just a mess. The front office, Ainge versus what's his name?
Vlade
Divac. God, I'm drawing so many blanks today. Ainge versus Vlade, obvious. Complete opposite than Vlade. Coaching situation, I mean, now they've got a more stable coaching situation. But prior to that, they were such a mess. So, and they still have to earn his respect now. Like, they have a big project ahead of them. You can say and make a very passionate argument that because the Celtics are the opposite of the Kings, that he could come in here and he's just passionate and he wants to win, and this situation will make him better. But I don't know if I want to risk that. What if he's not? And you've given up all of these things for a guy who's going to just bitch and moan at every perceived slight. I can't take that chance. So I will go for Jimmy Butler over Boogie. So
we're on the same page.
Yeah. Let's see. If Murray at Dumb Celtics Fans, if Murray, Dunn, or Buddy is drafted at 3, which current backcourt guy would you like to move and for what? I feel like we've kind of talked about this a little bit. As far as the starters that we have, I think I'm most okay with Avery Bradley moving, which it sucks to say, but Isaiah Thomas is a much more dynamic scorer, and we know that he's the heartbeat of the offense. Marcus Smart is not the shooter that Avery Bradley is, but I'm hopeful that he can develop into that and at least get close to Avery Bradley level shooting, which has improved a lot, by the way. Avery Bradley wasn't always a knockdown guy. So, and he might still make the argument that he's not exactly a knockdown guy. But Smart's defense is kind of close to Avery's, and he can guard more positions than Avery. So of that starting three, I'm most okay with Bradley going. For what?
Yeah.
I don't know. I would assume it's like for a star level type player, you know, in a Jimmy Butler type of trade, but that's how I feel.
Yeah, I think I agree with you there. And obviously, Avery Bradley does a lot of things. Obviously, you saw it in the Atlanta Hawks series. He was really important to their team on both ends of the court this year. But yeah, I think I'm with you because Smart has that potential, and the Celtics offense would fall apart without Isaiah. So I think you can best replicate what Avery Bradley gives to you. And if you're getting, say, Jimmy Butler in that trade, then, or somebody else that, that can give you, you know, that backcourt help. But it, it would have to be, if you move one of those guys, it has to be for a really good player. You're not going to, you're not going to move them for just anything. And well, there are going to be so many questions after this, this draft pick about what's next. You know, it's always what's next. And if they, if the Celtics pick any of those guards, it's going to be like, oh man, what's coming next? What trade? What move? What is Danny up to? So, and there are like four guards they could choose there. So there's a chance there's a huge logjam. And they like Terry Rozier. They think Terry Rozier is going to be a helpful player at some point. I don't know if that'll be this coming year, but they do like Terry Rozier.
Yeah, that, and yeah, that should be noted because they turned to him a lot when they were desperate down the stretch. They trusted Rozier more than anybody, and he showed some flashes. Like he definitely showed that he has some solid NBA potential. So, and he can shoot and he can defend and he's fast. That kid is fast. And we've said it before, that kid jumps for rebounds. Like, I swear he floats through the air. So let's not discount Rozier in this entire discussion. They definitely like him, and I've liked what I've seen so far. So why not see where that goes? So, okay. Next question. Papa Irish, who's a player you would be excited to see fall to 16? Excited to see fall. So somebody in this mix that may have gone higher that would fall to 16.
Deontay Davis. Deontay Davis is mine. That guy is a great athlete, rim protector, young kid from Michigan State. You know he's tough if he played for Tom Izzo. Out of anybody, I think Deontay Davis is the one. Just a great athlete, potential really good shot-blocking center down the road. I like Deontay Davis a lot if he falls.
Okay. I'll say, I know I said I'd be disappointed at 3 with Buddy Hield, but if he fell to 16, I'd be really happy if he fell to 16, because then that's a sweet spot for me. I think that's lower than I would project him. I would project him, like I said, 8 to 12. So if he fell to 16 and he was, then I'd be happy taking him there.
Yeah, I don't think Buddy's falling to 16, but
right. I don't think so either, but if he did. at Pollock, tell me all of the good about Jaylen Brown and none of the bad.
He's really, really, really athletic. Really athletic. And strong. And if you listened, did you listen to the Jimmy Butler podcast with Bill Simmons?
No, I didn't.
Okay, so Jimmy Butler, out of nowhere, was like, I really like Jaylen Brown. I was playing one-on-one against him, and I was really impressed. So he has Jimmy Butler's stamp of approval.
So there you go.
There you go. That's all you need to know.
Let's, man, we got a lot of other questions here, but these are, let's see. Well, Chris Littlefield sent us like a bunch of questions. But the most important thing that he said, for what it's worth, Rain and Jays is my favorite local podcast, second only to Bill Simmons. So, of course, everybody should be like Chris Littlefield. Subscribe
to us. No. Forget that. We should be number one. There should be no one except Bill Simmons. Forget Chris Littlefield, man.
No,
we're number
man.
One, Chris.
Look, that's fine. I'm cool.
All right, we're shooting for number one.
We're putting us in the picture with Bill Simmons. Maybe we can get some of that Bill Simmons money. Bill Simmons is a hell of a story. And I he's evolved into something completely different. And, you know, sometimes I can take it or leave it. But, man, that career path. Imagine having that trajectory where he was just starting. Man, he just started at the right time. That starting into blogging, like one of the original bloggers, and now he's making millions to put a show on HBO. That's amazing to me.
Yeah. I've always been a Simmons guy. I think his podcasts are awesome. I put his podcast over ours too. I'm with Chris Littlefield on this one. But we'll get there. We'll get there at some point. Yeah.
We just need to have some sort of falling out with a major sports network to really boost our profile. That's all.
Yeah, we just need to start bitching and moaning about the worldwide leader.
Let's. I want to talk a little bit about the finals before we wrap things up. We are recording Sunday morning before Game 7 of the NBA Finals. So first things first, Jay, who's winning tonight?
I am shocked. I believe this. I think the Cavs are going to do it.
You're going with Cleveland.
I think the Cavs are going to do it. I think the Warriors, luck has finally caught up to them. They're all sorts of banged up. Harrison Barnes has just been ghost lately. And LeBron is just on some other level of basketball that we have rarely seen in the history of the NBA. I'm going with Cleveland in Oracle. I don't know why I think this, but I'm going with it.
I mean, it's not impossible to say that they would do it. I mean, they've done it. They've won in Oracle this series. So maybe. I have this weird feeling like J.R. Smith is going to J.R. Smith them out of some key moments in a game like this. And Golden State's going to take advantage. I like Golden State. I thought Golden State was going to win it in six. I thought they were going to win in Cleveland. But they don't look great. They don't look great, but I think Game 7 at home, Golden State, and going away. So, but this leads us into this LeBron James talk. And again, there is this conversation going on local sports radio. And it's all about LeBron's legacy, which at this point, I can't believe we're still discussing LeBron's legacy because he's done everything he can. And he goes out there and plays like he's been playing all series long, and they lose. I don't see how you hold that against him. He's been playing awesome. He's been awesome. And you can hate him all you want. You cannot deny that he has been playing like a basketball god out there. He's done everything. So if he plays like this and he loses, you can't hold that against him. He should have been the MVP last year in a loss. He could be the MVP this year in a loss. He's just doing everything he can to win. And some people want to say, like, put him ahead of Larry Bird, behind Larry Bird. Larry Bird's been awesome in losses too. So it's not about comparing those two guys. But I think we're at a point now in LeBron's career. We can just safely say that he is, whatever you think he is, like, this game tonight shouldn't be a tiebreaker or something. Like, he is wherever he is.
Yeah, it's well past that point. I forget who put it. Maybe it was a tweet. Maybe I was reading an article. Somebody pointed this out. He's been the best player in five straight NBA finals. And yeah, you can hold that Miami-Dallas series against him. Ever since then, that guy has been a wrecking ball, and he's done it in the biggest moments. That game, when he went in, I hate to bring this up for Celtics fans because it's a bad, bad memory for you guys. Game 6, 2012, against the Celtics. I've never witnessed in person someone play basketball at a higher level. That was just ruthless against one of the best defenses in the NBA. And he was completely dominant. And he's done it the last two games. He's done it so many times. He's so damn good. And he's just done it over and over. There's not much you can say. You can dislike his attitude. You can dislike his ego. You can dislike whatever you want about his personality. I don't care. Do whatever you want. He seems like a decent enough guy to me. But about it, when it comes to basketball, that guy, everybody has to appreciate. He's forced everyone to appreciate his game. What he's done against the Warriors, they're one of the best teams ever, and he is just decimating them. It's fabulous to watch.
Yeah, it's amazing. But yeah, there's nothing else to say. It's amazing. So wherever you rank LeBron, above Larry Bird, alongside Larry Bird. I think at this point, personally, I hate putting guys at that level above or below each other. I just put them all on the same page. Like, they're in the same team picture. I think LeBron has earned himself a spot at the table with Bird and Magic and Jordan and those guys. He just has. And again, hate him all you want. I don't give a shit. Like, you could think of, you know, you can still hold the decision against him if you want. You can think he's an arrogant prick. I hate the flopping of a guy that level doesn't need to flop like he does. I get all of that stuff, but basketball wise, God, you know, if you want to say I'll take Larry Bird and I'll give you LeBron, I'm okay with that. I'll deal with that. Like, I think he's just at that level. He's at that level at this point. He's done it long enough, and he's evolved as a player. That stuff, that choking stuff that used to be something you could say, no longer. You can no longer say that about him, even if they lose tonight, which I think they will. So just one of those things. The whole legacy talk is just annoying because it is what it is at this point, win or lose.
Yeah, I mean, the guy's one of the all-time greats. Let's just appreciate it instead of debating after every single game. Not even after every playoff or every series. Every single game is right. Like, oh, there goes his legacy. Or now he's one of the best ever. He's approaching Jordan at this point. Just shut up. Stop debating it and appreciate the great basketball because he's played some fabulous basketball. But can we get a good game today? Can we get a competitive game 7? Just one time I want these two teams to play a close game.
It's been weird that they've gone 7 games and each game has been double digits.
Yeah. Give me a close game. Give me some clutch moments. Give me LeBron versus Stephen Curry. Tie ball game, 2 minutes left for the championship. That's what I want to see.
Let's finish with one last question from Danger Carts. C's viewed as analytics forward, but are predicted to take players with epically bad projections. So, do you prefer pancakes or waffles?
I'm a pancake type of guy. But yeah, like Jaylen Brown, if you look at the numbers, like Kevin Pelt, and I know we're supposed to be talking all positive things about Jaylen Brown. Kevin Pelton's 5-year wins above replacement player projection, he projected our 5 years wins above replacement player. He had Jaylen Brown at 101 in this draft class. 101! And I understand the fact that you're judging 18-year-olds. You can't base it all on the numbers. Some of it has to be this guy's a physical freak and wins above replacement player, doesn't accurately project how good a defender he will be, all these things. 101, Jaylen Brown. I don't know, man. I have trouble picking a guy who can't even get in the top 100 analytically. So, maybe he's going to be a good player. Maybe he's not. Jaylen Brown would not be my pick. He might be yours, though, especially if he falls to number 8 and the Celtics somehow get that pick. Yeah, I don't get it. Bender, analytically, scout-wise, seems to me like the safest pick because he's not going to help right away. I have a hard time envisioning a mobile 7-foot-1 guy who can shoot the 3 failing. He's going to become at least a good player, I think. Unless he goes like the Darko Milicic career path. But yeah, I think I really do. Yeah, as many years as he may need to develop, I think he's a safe pick with good upside. I think Bender might be my pick, and maybe scouts feel differently. It looked like Chad Ford. Do you read that like tier column he puts out there? Like rating prospects in tiers?
I haven't read that one, no.
Okay, so basically Simmons is number 1 and Ingram is in, I think, his own tier. And then there's like a lump of players the Celtics could draft. But according to Ford, which is interesting, a couple of GMs said that Dragan Bender would be in a lower tier than most of the other guys who the Celtics could consider at number three. So that was interesting to me that maybe he's not regarded as such a high prospect across the board. So we'll see. I still think Bender's the safest pick, but I might change that in 10 seconds. I'm intrigued by Dunn. I'm intrigued by a lot of these guys as bad fits as they are, or maybe.
I agree. I also like pancakes, to answer the question. I'm a pancake guy. If those are my choices, a little bit of butter on each level, and then but that's just me. Okay, that'll do it. We're going to wrap things up. Guys, the draft is Thursday. And by the way, we still have Kevin O'Connor's draft guide available. Pick it up. The updated version is out now. So if you want to be that draft expert, Kevin has put a ton of work into this. He did a great, great job. He's asking $10 for it, but with us and the code RAIN on the Rain and Jays podcast, you can get it for $9. The link is going to go up on this podcast page. You will have seen it if you're on Red's Army, or if you're getting this through your subscription, go to redsarmy.com. The link is there to buy it. The promo code is there. You get it for $9. You get every stitch of information you can get for this draft. You will not be disappointed. You will know everything you need to know about the NBA draft. And while we're at it, and we're asking you to do things, rate us, give us 5 stars, iTunes or whatever app you're on, give us the 5 stars, give us a positive rating on iTunes. Get that word out there. People love the Rain and Jays podcast, but the more you spread the word, the more people are going to get to see this, and the more we're going to be able to do. So that's it. We'll see you after the draft. We're going to talk to you after the draft about everything that's happened and how all of the ways we were wrong on this show today. I can't wait to do it next time on the Rain and Jays podcast.